welcome back to another exciting episode of the Captain America Minute, where we examine the 2011 Joe Johnston-directed feature, Captain America, the First Avenger, at the rate of 1 minute of screen time per episode. I'm one of your hosts just a few miles from Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. This is Jim O'Kane of TVDads.com.
And I'm Hal Bryan, an airplane nerd from the home of the Experimental Aircraft Association here in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
And I'm Brian Fees, a graphic novelist and lifelong Avengers comic book reader. And Jim, tell us who we're talking to today.
And I'm very pleased and honored to have a great friend, a fellow North Carolinian. I'm a transplant North Carolinian, but we have just a wonderful guy who's rather famous around these parts, longtime meteorologist in eastern North Carolina, and now a realtor who happened to sell me the house I am living in now, and I'm very grateful. Thank you, Philip Williams, for coming on our show.
Hey, you're very welcome, Jim. You're great to work with there, absolutely. And I got my start here way back in, 1987 was my first time on TV talking about the weather, and I did that until 2022.
Wow, that's funny. Well, we're going to get into more of that, but Hal, why don't you fill us in on what's going on in this dimly lit antique store in Brooklyn?
All right, steal my first line, why don't you? Inside the dimly lit Brooklyn antique shop, an elderly woman behind the counter looks up as Peggy Carter and Steve Rogers step inside, the bell above the door chiming softly. Her voice, warm but with a knowing edge, greets them. Wonderful weather this morning, isn't it? Peggy, composed and alert, offers a measured smile. Yes, but I always carry an umbrella. Her words, a coded exchange, linger briefly. The woman's eyes flicker with recognition, and she gives a subtle nod. Beneath the counter, she presses a hidden button placed next to a lethal-looking machine gun. A hidden panel behind a wall of books slides open, revealing a concealed passageway. Peggy moves forward with purpose, her eels... I'm going to take that again, Jim, and you're going to cut this part.
Okay. Beep, beep, beep.
Thank you. Peggy moves forward with purpose, her heels echoing on the floor, while Steve trails behind, his face etched with curiosity and caution. They step into a secret military facility, the shop's quaint exterior giving way to a maze of steel corridors, burly military police, and hunting machinery.
It is quite a change from what the inside to outside. So a very, very enjoyable part and interesting code words of wonderful weather. Philip, we always I guess all weather is wonderful. I mean, it you kind of filled with wonder every time you look out the window. And I have to know the first question you probably get asked by everybody wanting to know about meteorology is how on earth did you get into this topic from childhood, I would guess.
It was from childhood. My grandfather, Williams, used to tell me stories, starting with the 1927 snowstorms we had back then when you could walk across the field and the back of his jacket would drag across the top of the snow. And now we're in the South, so we don't get much snow. So that was an extreme event. And so for me, I would always call him and he would give me the sayings about, you know, the ring around the moon, meaning that a snowstorm might be coming. And we would talk about the weather and he would just give me clues to how to forecast way back when I was like maybe 5-6 years old. So meteorology, that was like what I wanted to do since I was 6 years old, really.
Wow.
Something my co-hosts don't even know about me is that when I was a kid, I was a weather nerd. I knew the names and shapes of all the clouds. I built my own hygrometer and my own barometer. They didn't really work, but I built them. And so I really relate to that. It seems to be something that kids latch into. Some kids latch into really early.
It's I get that a lot.
You can look up and do.
Yeah, because I speak to a lot of school classes and a lot of kids, weather's one thing that's easily shared by everyone. So it's a common conversation starter. And it's just a way you can communicate with someone, even if they're a total stranger, by talking about the weather. So I think that's a kind of a common shared life experience for all of us. And that makes it kind of exciting as you're a little kid to learn about that and how it affects us all every day.
Now, Philip, when you say you were interested in this since you were a kid, you wanted to be a meteorologist. At what point did you think you not only wanted to study the science of meteorology, but then you wanted to be a personality around it? You wanted to be on radio or television and actually tell the world about it. What was that transition like?
When I was very young, it was all about learning about the science. So at first, it was all about learning, what makes tornadoes and hurricanes and what makes floods and so forth. So that was the initial interest that I had. And then as I got a little older, my parents said, "You know what, Philip? We should go ahead and get you braces on your teeth just in case." So about age 13, I went ahead and got braces in case TV was in my future, and turned out it was. So I do have straighter teeth now than I used to. But yeah, that's kind of how it went for me. Is by the time I got to college, I began to look at my options, and actually, I got offered jobs that were not in television when I first left college, and that was NC State where I went for meteorology. And I just thought, it's kind of whatever led me one way or the other. I had a chance for a job with National Weather Service, but they passed the Graham Rudman Hollings bill the day before I was to be hired there, and that froze all hirings. So it's amazing how I kind of got led into television by circumstances that happened around me, and started TV in late 1987 when you would draw on the side of a cube and you spin your map to the other side, and draw on that side. And but yeah, then I came to the local CBS affiliate in Greenville, North Carolina in like 1988 and did that till 2009, and then went to the NBC affiliate from 2011 to 2022.
Green screen must have changed your life.
Oh, yes, absolutely. In fact, what's amazing is I look back at how naive I was, because my first time in front of a green screen was live on air. I didn't even think that's something you should practice. And so boom, throw me out there to the wolves and just start pointing at things. And I was very fast, very jerky. But I learned my way as it went on. And luckily, it came to me right away. And I was able to figure it out, how you look at one television screen while you point behind you. And I loved it. And from that point on, I think I was kind of hooked with the TV bug and the weather bug at the same time.
I was thinking about the practice of meteorology and how much it's changed in, say, the past several decades, from the advent of satellite photos in the 60s to powerful computer modeling in the 21st century. And I could hardly think of some other realm of science to compare it to, like maybe biology when DNA was discovered, or geology when they figured out plate tectonics. I mean, I know you weren't a meteorologist in the 60s, but you must have seen some of that dramatic progress in just the course of your own career.
Oh, I've seen a huge, huge change. I really have. I mean, the computer models have come such a long way, because at first, when I first would look at weather maps, they were the types of weather maps that were burned onto wet paper. And so a little line would go across, it would burn a line, then come back and burn a line. It would take a couple of hours at least to get like just a couple of weather maps out. So back in the day, like I was in college, we would have the dial-up computer that would dial up, and it would print out like one block of a single radar image. So even when I was on television, I would have to use that old dial-up to dial in, freeze an image of the radar from the local radar site, and then save that image and use it on television 15 minutes later. So there was no such thing as live radar when I first started. So things have evolved so much in that regard. The computer models have gotten better. Nowadays, you have AI as well, which is helping. But yeah, radar's changed, satellite has changed, the way data is even collected, some of that has changed, although we still rely on the weather balloons that are sent up by weather service offices around the world. And it's so great that many nations around the world do cooperate, even during geopolitical tensions. They still cooperate with weather data. And that is vital, because, in fact, the snowstorm that we just had here recently was first picked up by data over China, Japan, and Russia. So it's interesting that that helps our forecast down the road based on what happens in other places.
It's astonishing. I mean, I've moved. This is kind of North Carol. This part of North Carolina is kind of a hurricane alley. But when I moved from Texas, we were in the midst of tornado alley. And just in the time that I had first lived there in the late 70s to nowadays, with things like Doppler radar, forecasters are able to predict where tornadoes were going within a block of each. I mean, the precision is magnitudes different over just, the course of our lifetimes.
Yeah, it really is fascinating, because I, of course, was on television through the whole advent of Doppler radar when we first began to incorporate Doppler radar into the weathercast, and to see the ability, just to see it detect the motion of the wind and raindrops within a storm, that was just fascinating, because then you could suddenly see, oh, okay, so this is where the tornado would be within the thunderstorm. And here, most of our tornadoes will be on the southwest side of the actual core of the storm. So being able to detect that, I could go on the air and show what we call storm relative velocity. And it would show us, again, if the raindrops moving one way or the other, you can see a, what we call a couplet where the rain's going around in a circle. And we could use that to detect that's where the core of the tornado is, and then label those streets and say, look, if you live on this highway or this street, seek your shelter now. This is where it's going. And also the technology to forecast the storm motions and be able to draw a line and say, okay, the storm is moving northeast at 30 miles per hour. So if it continues, it's going to be in this place in 5 minutes, this place in 10 minutes. And that way, it gives people a chance to go ahead, look, seek your shelter now, your lowest level of your home, away from windows and things like that. So I think it really helped us a lot to save lives. We've had some big tornado outbreaks in eastern North Carolina over the years. I wish we had Doppler back in 1984. We lost a lot of lives one evening back then before Doppler happened. So, yeah, Doppler has really helped a lot to save lives.
I live in Northern California, so we don't have tornadoes. But where I am amazed almost every day is when I look at my phone and my phone says, we're going to get a quarter inch of rain starting at 5:17. And you look out the window at 5:17, and by God, there it is. It's just astonishing to me every time that happens. It's so accurate. It's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. I wish they were that accurate here. They're not quite that good yet for us because so many things pop up and change for us because it's so warm in the summer and chilly in the winter. We get those quick variations. But yeah, it is amazing how the technology has improved to that point where you can begin to rely more on that technology to give you accurate forecasts. And those can be very, very important, especially when you are dealing with severe weather. That's to me that the most important time that we pay attention to what the analogs are telling us and what your meteorologists are telling you in your area.
It affects, I mean, the weather affects everybody, but I would imagine, there's some critical careers and professions that it says. I know Hal must Hal as a pilot has to refer to weather reports that are updated every 10 minutes. Is that right, Hal? I don't know
It
how often.
depends on the type and the forecast and things like that. But yeah, that's something, and I claim no special knowledge, but certainly when I am planning to fly from somewhere, and I'm primarily a visual flight rules pilot flying in nicer weather, but even on a nice day, and you're concerned about what's the wind speed and direction at various altitudes, because that's going to affect how long it's going to take me and how much fuel there's going to be. And if it is a day that's a little bit marginal, is it trending better? Is it trending worse? Because I am not somebody who wants to hurry up and try to squeeze in somewhere just before the storm hits. I've been in that position, and that's no fun, and it's never worth it.
The other thing that I was thinking about as a television personality, beyond a meteorologist, you've been in people's houses every day, every evening, every morning, and it must feel an odd sense of familiarity that I think is only accorded people who work on soap operas, that you're part of everybody's family in this part of North Carolina. So you must get accosted in supermarkets with people updating you on their family stories and things and telling you how the storm affected their lives. So I would imagine a lot of conversations start that way with you.
Yeah, they do. And I gotta say, I love it. I mean, a lot of people that do get recognized a lot say they don't want to be recognized, whatever. But no, I do. It's awesome. I love to go to the grocery store and have people start up a conversation because they act like they know me, and it's great because people are fascinating and people have their own stories to share, and I really enjoy listening to it. And I actually notice whenever I am not recognized. Like if I travel, I have been traveling before, and I was in Las Vegas one time, and I actually noticed when I walked through places that nobody looked at me, and it's interesting, how that I never thought that would be the case, but I've been on television since I was about 22 years old, so for my entire adult life, I've been on television in this part of the world anyway. So if I went anywhere within 2 hours drive of where I am, people have seen me at some point or another, or at least they're like, are you a teacher? Are you, I get those things where like, what do you, I know you somehow, are you a minister? It's like, no. So a lot of times I'll get that. And that's a good way to start a conversation as well.
I've heard there's a downside though, because I've known some regional television personalities like yourself, and what they will tell me is you can't go to the hardware store in a dirty t-shirt and flip-flops.
Oh my
Every
gosh.
time you go to the diner, you gotta look good.
I learned that in like 1988 when I got up on a Saturday morning and there was a local gas station here that had a little convenience store. They served the best cheese biscuits in the world. And so I got up early on a Saturday morning. I threw on a gray sweatshirt, didn't wash my hair, went out there. And as I ordered my cheese biscuit, the lady said, "Oh my gosh, you're Philip Williams." And I just wanted to crawl in a hole because it's like, don't see me now, you know? And yeah, I honestly, since that point, I think I've washed my hair every day since then.
Yeah, I just picture you having like a green room right by the front door just before you go out the door. Check.
Yeah, makeup and
Exactly.
hair and makeup and everything. And of course, if that happened now, we'd see you on TMZ in this very unflattering pose, sort of stuffing your face with cheese biscuits and
Right, right.
looking terrified at the camera as somebody stalked you.
Oh, I gotta say, now that I've left television and I'm 60 years old, it's like it doesn't matter anymore.
You can get the flip-flops on and just head out.
There you
Understood.
go.
Wow.
Exactly. Live life, you know.
Well,
Yeah.
we should talk a little bit about this particular minute of the
Yes.
movie. As Brian had mentioned, we were yesterday's episode. We had or the previous episode, we've talked about things like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Get Smart and all these secret buttons and hideaways and hidden panels, which I think is a feature of motion pictures and TV. We all want to have a secret lair just behind another door that you can press a button. So, yeah, it's amazing what a common trope that is. I mean, I've always wanted to have a study where it had the word gym on a pole that I could just slide down into my cave. But which maybe.
Jim, you and I talked about this a bit before you started recording, and after we recorded the last episode, I thought of the Kingsman, which
Yes.
is you walk into a little tailor shop in London, and you get buzzed into a back room, and the back room is an elevator that goes about a quarter mile under the earth. There's a subway station down there, a pneumatic tube that whisks you 50 miles out in the countryside. It's fantastic. And I thought of that, and that's the closest analog I could think of to what happens to this to Peggy and Steve in this movie.
Right. And see, my example would be, I think, far more extreme, but I'm thinking about the Thunderbirds on Tracy Island.
Of
Uh,
course.
the, the they sit in the chairs and then it turns around and then they're dropped down and this whole elaborate process until they end up in this giant cavernous hangar inside the cockpit of whatever vehicle they're about to fly in.
Yeah, they've
And
never heard of a jetway,
yes, exactly. Or stairs.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, but these things happen. Now, Philip, your current career is as a realtor, so you must walk through a lot of houses and things. Have you seen odd arrangements or configurations of homes where there might be secret passages or extra rooms that nobody would know about unless.
Yeah, I have seen that actually. Normally, it has to do with bookcases. It seems like every time it's a bookcase, even the movies, it's always a bookcase.
My
But yeah.
daughter wants me to build her a bookcase that's the door to her bedroom, and I think we're going to
Okay.
do it. I think we're going to do
Yeah.
it.
It's a good idea. Yeah, I went to one house. It was a really nice house. And yeah, you walk down a hallway and you go into one bedroom, and then there's a bookcase, and you press that, and it opened up into a whole, it had a whole bedroom and bathroom that was stuck
Wow.
behind. And I guess it was like their safe room or so. So I have seen some
Wow.
of those. It's pretty wild. Yeah.
Well, I keep wondering if is that just a natural development, or did they get the idea from T? Probably saw a good movie and say, we should do that.
Yes, I
Yeah,
should do that.
probably.
If Philip, as a realtor, does something like that automatically add or detract from a home's value, or is it just another variable to consider?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person because, yeah, if that's something that's important to you, then obviously that's a house you're going to seek out. Because there are some, and sometimes they'll advertise that there was there's a safe room or something like that.
Right.
So it can be a big plus if that is if the right buyer comes along that wants that. Otherwise, I don't know that necessarily raises the total value of the home for the average person. It is something that if that's what you're looking for, like, for example, a swimming pool, that doesn't add or subtract to the value of a home. But if you really want that, then that's the one you want.
Sure.
Yeah, I the
The idea of advertising a secret room feels a little bit
yeah,
oxymoronic,
doesn't
but I guess if you're
it?
selling it, it's not your secret anymore. So
Exactly at
it's
that
not.
point. Yep.
The house that I've moved into here that Philip found us has a hot tub, and I've never had a hot tub, and I didn't know it was going to be here, but now that now that it's here, except that it's a long walk through the snow to get to it, right? It's a moment, but I used it a lot more than I ever thought I would. So it's yeah,
Awesome.
it's fascinating what other things people add onto their homes.
Yeah, around here too, screen porches are big. I made sure I added a screen porch to my house because that way mosquitoes don't get you.
Yeah, and it is nice to sit out here with the breeze at night. I was thinking that North Carolina as a meteorological center, it must be just fascinating for people in the meteorology business because you've got the Gulf Stream, you've got the Piedmont, you've got all these different geographic features that are causing a lot of weather to happen all the time. So this must be like a mecca for meteorologists, I would think.
Yeah, this is really, I got lucky to be born in eastern North Carolina to like a really fascinating place for weather, like you said, because we have the Appalachian Mountains to the west. So they block a lot of cold air trying to come in from the west. We have the Atlantic Ocean to the east, but we can sometimes get cold air damming here where cold air comes down east of the mountains. It gets trapped at the surface and we end up getting warm air over it and we get ice storms. So, we have ice storms, snowstorms, we get the tornadoes, severe thunderstorms, hurricanes. We get it all here because also North Carolina juts out east. In fact, eastern North Carolina is farther east than Miami. So when you think about it, because we jut out, we do get a lot of hurricanes. In fact, one out of three hurricanes will pass within about 150 miles of Cape Hatteras, either side. So we're dealing with hurricanes every season as to where they're going to go. And growing up, we had little tracking charts that, we'd plot every little location. I remember getting up every day at 6 a.m. as a 10-year-old to listen to the National Weather Service with their hurricane update, tropical weather outlook. And I would plot where a tropical depression was all the way across the Atlantic. And so to me, tropical weather was the most exciting for me growing up. And that's one thing that really got me into meteorology, I think.
Wow. No, I can see how this would just really bring you into it. Well, this is exactly, it's funny, every episode that we've been doing of this show, there's always another opportunity to talk about many different topics. And I'm always fascinated. Like you said, the weather is everybody's topic of conversation. So this being able to talk about the weather is nice to be able to do on this particular show. So thank you for being a part of all this.
Sure. Hey, Jim, let me add one more thing too. Just one thing that I share with my school kids a lot, which I think makes people feel good, is that if you've ever been somewhere when it's raining and the sun is shining at the same time, you are at the end of somebody's rainbow.
Ooh.
That makes you the pot of gold.
That is awesome.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. If now you're currently in your current career is that of real estate, all weather realty.
Yes.
Where can people find you if they're looking for a home in this beautiful part of North Carolina?
Yes, All Weather Realty, please look me up. You can Google me, All Weather Realty, or Google Philip Williams. You can find me, allweatherrealty.com. So, yeah, absolutely. Please look me up. I'd be happy to help you help buyers and sellers buy and sell homes all throughout Eastern North Carolina.
I can, as a satisfied customer, I can heartily recommend that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it. And Brian Howe, nice to talk to you guys for sure.
Good to meet you. Thank you.
And I'd like to thank our audience also. If you'd like to continue our conversation, we're always available at Camp Lehigh, the Captain America Minute listeners base over on Facebook. If you do like our show, don't forget to subscribe, leave a like at the podcast streaming service where you found this episode. Also, please check out our website, capminute.com, for the latest about our podcast topics and guests. And be sure to join us here next time on the Captain America Minute.
I can do this all day.